Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's a fine evening here at the studio. So fine. Nah, crap. What's the right way to finish that? It's so fine something. What is it?
It's as sweet as wine.
Somehow it has to mix in with Booba's comb, but I don't know.
Yeah, here's the deal. I've not met anybody that is less than like 65 that carries a comb in their back pocket. And Booba apparently left one in the studio last week and goes, then, "Oh, hey, I've been looking for that."
Was like, and then was very excited to have found it.
You got the fine comb on one end and the thick...
Here's the deal, man. My beard gets kind of crazy throughout the day, I'm going to be honest.
Didn't they do that on Grease?
They did. Like, all the guys? Totally. I have determined, and so have my friends, that I'm becoming a hipster. And okay. I don't know how it happened. It started randomly, and then it's just gotten worse and worse and worse. To the point where I'll say this on air, that way I'm held accountable to it. I contemplated buying a subscription to a website for beards recently.
Why is becoming a hipster something you're looking forward to, though?
No, I'm not looking forward to it. I
feel like you're not fighting it, though. Yeah. I mean, you brought a comb in front of a bunch of other fellas.
Yeah, you're letting it happen.
Technically, I left the comb here, and then now I'm excited to find it.
And then brought it to everyone's attention that you left it.
Notice nobody stole it.
Hey, man.
All right, hey, you're listening to Live from the Past.
My first comb.
If you have a comb in your back pocket right now, congratulations on the Social Security, or you need to change your ways. Those are your two options. You're listening Live from the Path. Here's what we got going on the show today. First of all, Driven 11 is joining us in the studio. Dominic with Driven 11, and here's the deal. This guy does everything. This guy does everything. Like, he wasn't doing origami earlier when we were talking, but I feel like he had an itch for it.
Yeah.
And that's because he just got everything going on. He's written a book. He's got an album out recently. He's touring around. He's talking to folks. All kinds of stuff, man. He's the coolest guy in the room, bar none.
Yeah.
So we're gonna talk to him and make him prove that. And catch up with him and see what's going on in his life. I got some Pope style advice, and the preview is that let's see the right way to put this. Oh, right. The preview for my Pope style is we need to stop setting milestones and start walking miles. That's my Pope style advice. Mike's got some Dear Life from the Path. Mike, did you take a look at this at all?
Yeah, there happens to be divorced parents have a very cozy relationship, and the daughter is she's itchy about it. She don't like it.
She not? Oh, don't care for it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I understand. All right. So we'll do that advice on Dear Life from the Path. Also, I was at we're on the Truth Network 99.3 FM. But broadcasting into Central Iowa just relatively recently. And they set up and they were broadcasting from the Family Values
Family Leader.
Family Leadership Summit. That's what it was. So and that was in town. And if you you'll remember it, if you've been watching the news at all, because this was the event in which Donald Trump said some considerably offensive things about John McCain and also was asked if he'd ever repented or ever asked for God for forgiveness, and he basically said, blah, 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 no. So anyway, I was there all day, and there was a guy that recognized me there, and he goes, "I'm really surprised that you're here. I wouldn't expect that you would be at one of these events." I'm like, "That is correct, sir." but I was there, and it was interesting to be at a place where I normally wouldn't be. But I do have a reaction to it, I think the event as a whole, and maybe some of the stuff that was going on. So if we have time, I might talk about that. You know, we don't do a lot of political stuff, but this is Jesus stuff. And so we'll probably talk about that.
Is there any chance, even though I did not attend, that you would accept my commentary on what happened?
No, yeah, I think that's going to be fine, yeah.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely ready for it. All right, so a big thanks, by the way, before we get going and ruin the show, to Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower Team. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com for all your home buying and selling needs. Bob is just your man for the job. He does great work. I know a number of satisfied customers. That's where Mike bought his house with Bob. He's come on the show many times.
He's actually coming on the show here in the. I just talked to him this week.
Okay, sweet.
So he's coming in pretty soon. In fact, I had to get a hold of him because I drove past his office, and there is a piece of land for sale next to his office building, not being sold by him.
Well, that's rough times.
And so I took a picture of him. I'm like, Bob, what's going on? Who is this charlatan? You know. And he goes, yeah, I know him. It turns out he's just a buddy of his or whatever. You know, he's worked for the same company. It's not a big deal. But, I mean, I was appalled. It's like taking a hot dog cart to the Burger King parking lot. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't set up selling real estate in Bob's backyard. He took it like a champ. I was upset on his behalf. It was unnecessary.
Yeah, Bob's a quality guy. You want some hometown gossip or something, he's not dishing out.
Yeah, that's not
like, I know that guy, and he's all right. Anyway, Bob, as a matter of fact, the whole Eisenhower team is a hoot. To have at the, we had him at the last time we did a Live from the Path buffet night.
We need to do that again.
Yeah, we got to set that stuff up. Those guys are awesome.
Yeah, it was fun.
Maybe so, before Bubba takes off.
Oh, man, we'd have to get that in.
That's
like directly.
I was going to say, that's this week. I leave
this
week?
Oh,
you leave Monday, right?
Yeah, I leave a week from today.
Yeah, Bubba's leaving the country.
That means Bubba's not going to be on the show for like 3 weeks?
Four.
Man, what are we going to do with all the air in the room?
Can we get a cardboard cutout of you before you take off?
We can put the Vader in his place.
I'm all right my own with that, but I feel like you guys should be the ones who get the cardboard cutout, because if I do it, I'm going to get made fun of.
Yeah. We'll take care of this. I don't know what we're going to tell his fans, all the boobies that are out there. They're going to be upset.
Really? Well done.
Anyway, sorry, Bob. Thanks to Bob Eisenhower.
Anyway. Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower.
Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com. If you're looking to buy or sell a house, do not call one of us. We have absolutely no skill either in radio or real estate. However, Bob Eisenhower is your man for the job, and get a hold of him. All right, so here's the deal. First thing I want you to do, Dominic, I need you to explain to me. Here's a question I asked when he came here. I said, how am I to refer to you? Because you remember, we ran into this problem when King MC was in. Mm-hmm. So I like King MC. He's a good friend of the show, but I couldn't figure out if I was supposed to call him like the King.
Mr. MC, or Sir Eric,
yeah, or his name, right? And so, like, I'm not making that mistake again. So I thought, so your ministry is Driven 11. You are Dominic. Tell me the distinction between the two, so that I might grow wise for it. And then tell me a little about Driven 11.
All right. Well, you know what? Actually, you can call me Digger if you want. That was my nickname growing up.
I love it.
Yeah. Don't ask.
No problem.
No problem.
We ain't going to ask.
Went through lots of tissues. But
oh, my.
So my name is Dominic Cox. Driven 11 is the ministry that covers me being an author, a musician, speaker, or just about anything anyone needs. That's it. There's really nothing more to it than I'm just here to inspire people's faith than action. There's too many stagnant churches out there, and that's what I think. We've got to get them moving.
How do we get that way?
How do we get that way?
Yeah, why are churches stagnant?
Stagnant because they're not doing anything.
No, that's the definition of stagnant.
That's the definition of stagnant, I mean, right? A pond, it's just sitting there, it gets kind of scummy, water, it flows, you know, that's a river.
Has the church never done anything, or like how do we get to this point?
How do we get to this point?
Yeah.
There's lots of reasons. We have people that just don't think they can do anything because they've lost self-worth or they've lost value, or... Yo, so you got to put me on the spot. Like, you know, this is the first time I've been on the radio in a while, and you just got to ask these questions.
We're an illegitimate radio show. It's not a big deal. I said boobies, not boobies.
No, I just find many people are scared to go. And it could be something as simple as just having a kind word or choosing not to gossip about somebody. It's those little pieces of kindness that we have in our daily lives with everyone around us that is putting our faith in action. It's not musicians going to radio stations like this lovely establishment here. Or
you've been fooled on all levels.
Fooled on all points. or anything like that. It's really the change is through fellowship and with working within your communities right where you're at. And that's what the Great Commission is all about, is just being active right where you are. And that's what Driven 11 is trying to inspire.
So where's the name come from?
Oh, great. You got 5 hours?
I do.
Fantastic. All right. When I first started doing music about 8 years ago, I was starting with a group called Driven Worship. It was a local worship band. It was kind of cool. I say kind of because we're doing mostly 80s rock. And
so did you just take it up to 11?
I took it up to 1981.
Okay.
You know, all right. So that's what I did. I just pushed it. It's just like hands are coming at me.
Got it.
You're in the wrong spot, Dominic.
Smooth.
So as we kept on moving along, I wanted to make sure that we're hitting a mainstream audience as well. So we just changed it to Driven. Still, message didn't change, just the name. So as things are going along, moved down to Nashville. I became a solo act because all of my members went to different areas of ministry. One guy ended up going with a mission group, and now he's an A&R rep doing that. Had another gentleman went down to Honduras. I'm like, all right, Lloyd, well, I'm here anyways. solo act time, let's do it. And started writing the book, started going to music, and as I was reading through scripture, I caught a hold of Driven 11, which is, or not, you know, it doesn't say that in scripture. Take that back. I am not trying to blaspheme
in
the word
Peter,
of God.
It was Dominic, call your thing, Driven 11. Well, I've never seen this before.
I've never seen this before. Hebrews 11, faith in action, to go not even knowing if you're going to get a reward or blessing. Rather, you go because you're supposed to, and it may just be a blessing for somebody else. Mm-hmm. So that's where the 11 comes from. I don't have any tattoos for that, though.
Hey, man, what do you have tattoos for?
Yeah.
What?
Anyway, you believe. I really love that puppy.
I really love
That's all I know. I think that's
a thing that we definitely need to hear. Because I think I would agree there is stagnation in the church, and I think a lot of it is like we just don't know what to do with ourselves, which is weird because like you feel like Jesus kind of tells you what to do, and has came as a physical example of what to do. But I would agree that it seems we sometimes have a hard time putting the finger as if we don't have access to the ability to do something with our lives.
I think he nailed it. Was scared to go. Like I think they absolutely nailed it. They're just scared to go. It all seems like it makes sense when you're sitting listening to the sermon on Sunday. You're going yeah. I get what you're saying. And then the situation will come up and you'll go, you can't really have meant that, right? Because like it seems absolutely ridiculous. I'm scared to trust that this is going to turn out well, right? I think scared to go nails it.
Right on. All right. So hey, so tell me a little bit about the different facets of what you got going on. First of all, you released an EP in March.
Yep.
Called Light of the Future. So tell me a little bit about that.
All right, well, Light of the Future is, I mean, the title song on it is Light of the Future, which, oddly enough, I'm not singing tonight. but the whole course of that is, first was the light, then came the light, we are the light. God was the light, he's the Alpha and the Omega, was always here. Then he sent his son Christ to be the light for us. But now that he is risen and we are filled with the Holy Spirit, we are now called to be the light, the salt of the earth. And until he comes, it's our job. And that's the whole premise of the book that we are, or not the book, but of... the light of the future of we are light. We're supposed to take action, get involved in people's lives, wear the light, be the salt.
Hey, man, doesn't that change? If you look at that from that perspective, does that not put into a very direct understanding of where the light is, the darkness has to flee? Mm-hmm. Right? So like, if you put that on your own account and recognize the power that comes with what Christ has otherwise sent you out to do, like that's a powerful life. Mm-hmm. It's a powerful life where that stuff is being taken. And so I don't know. Maybe in combination of scared to go, we just don't recognize what we can do.
I've never known actual light that is scared of darkness, though. I mean, light for the most part just says, "Oh, hey, it's dark in here." But guess what? Now it's not, and that's what light does.
Well, that's true. I suppose it follows itself.
Yeah, it just invades. It evades the room, and it says, "Okay, now we're light in here." Boom, it takes over.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. All right. Cool. So what else on here? Coming Home, Passenger, Glory to His Name. Are you playing any of those tonight?
Oh, absolutely.
Which one have you got on the docket tonight?
I was going to do Coming Home first. That's actually sort of my testimony of my biggest hang-up is pride. Like you said earlier, I can do everything, and that felt really nice. But I got to remember I got to direct worship up to him because it's not about me. I enjoy playing. I enjoy when people say, hey, you're playing nice music, and I do everything I can just to direct that worship back to him because I'm not designed for that. I screw up all the time.
That's fair. Do you do origami, though?
Do I do origami?
Yes.
I'm not answering that question.
God has restricted it to humble you. So let's do this. Let's hear Coming Home, and then we'll pick up more talking with Dominic.
I was arrogant to think I could chase after the wind. Oh, and I get swept away. So I packed my bags and set a course. Temptations of this world quickly broke my heart. Learned I'm better off a fool than to have it all without you. As my song grows faint tonight, I'll be running back to you. Don't hide your love from me.
The wind will come. I'm chasing you now. I'm coming home. I'm coming home. Coming home to stay. I'm coming home. I'm coming home. Coming home to stay. I thought that freedom had escaped. Mistook my pride for strength. Disappointment my reward. Looked at all my hands have done, all meaningless under the sun. As my song grows faint tonight, I'll be running back to you. Don't hide your love from me. The wind will come. I'm chasing you now. I'm coming home. I'm coming home. Coming home to stay. I'm coming home. I'm coming home. Coming home to stay. There you are, with your arms wide open, loving me, loving me like I never left. There you are, with your arms wide open, loving me like I never left. My song grows faint tonight, I'll be running back to you. Don't hide your love from me. The wind will come. I'm chasing you now. I'm coming home. I'm coming home. I'm coming home to stay. I'm coming home. I'm coming home. I'm coming home to stay. I'm coming home. And I'm coming home. I'm coming home to stay.
Woo! Woo! Man, I love that song.
Yeah, no doubt, man. That was cool.
I'd say it was good, but I don't want to mess with your pride issues.
I don't want to mess that pride.
Yeah, I could give or take it. Probably take it, but I could give or take it.
I don't know.
Yeah,
you know. It's okay.
It's like an Oldsmobile.
Here's the deal. Like the same part of that scripture that gets me is the same part of that song that gets me, right? Like the – I was thinking about this while you're singing. It's like just the repeated chorus of I'm coming home. Like it seems to mean more every time that you say it. You know what I'm saying? Like it just seems to be like I'm coming home. Like at first you don't really believe it, and then I'm coming home like, – I'm going to do this thing, and then, but you're just so resolute that I'm coming home back to where I belong, and like, and I know you're going to be there, and like, I don't know, I really liked it, man. It was cool.
Thanks.
I think one of the things that I picked up on and I love, I mean, from the concept of pride, like you were talking about, it's funny you keep saying I'm coming home because we're the ones who have to move. We are the ones who need to change. It's not God that needs to change to us, and it's not God that needs to move to us. We're the ones who need to humble ourselves and go to Him. And we need to find ourselves realizing that He's the more important one. He's the stronger one that we need to go to rather than the other way around. I like that a lot.
All right, man. So if people want to pick up that EP, where do they go to get it?
Oh, iTunes, Amazon. They can go to the website, driven11.com, and it'll direct you right to it.
Sweet. You can get it everywhere. How long have you been singing? Like, when did you learn to play guitar and sing and stuff?
Actually, I've only been playing guitar for about 7 years. I actually wanted to learn how to sing songs to my kids because you can't do it while playing a saxophone.
Right.
Yeah. I tried it. It's like... Yeah.
That's enough Baker Street.
Yeah. So I actually picked up guitar, started learning a few chords, got some bleeding fingers, and after about a month, I was able to play some songs for my daughter.
Awesome.
But as far as singing, I've been singing since high school. Crazy part was after... I got married and I was in the military. Music left for like a good 8-9 years. It took a back burner. And it wasn't until I started singing with the church that I started singing and playing again.
Cool. It's funny how that can happen. Like, especially, I don't know, we've ran into folks who, kind of were musicians and they felt like this is what God has for me. And then have found their lives to be kind of taken away from that avenue only to come back at a different time. and have it be who was in here that was never mind, I'll think
James Brown.
No, yeah, it is James Brown.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Watch me. Remember when he was in here?
I must
couldn't
have
contain himself.
anyway. Oh, it was Stevie Sites. Remember?
Yeah.
He was like he had some A&R stuff going on, like and things were really moving away. And then he said God basically took him off it. And I think he started a family, started raising kids, and now he's I was like a decade or something later, and he's back in on it.
Yeah.
And it was just a deal like God just had – he gave him some talents, but he had something else going on.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. All right, so tell me about this book. You got a book coming out called Perception Matters.
Yeah, yeah.
Customer loyalty is easier than you think. So where's this book coming from?
All right, so at the end of the day, I am just an ambassador for the Lord Jesus Christ, and I am cleverly disguised as a musician right now. Sometimes I'm disguised as an author and all different kinds of things, and we're all disguised as different things, whether you be a carpenter, service, it doesn't really matter. And the book, yeah, that's what it says on the title, but the reality is it's just helping you improve your communication across the board, whether it be with your family or at work. I mean, it's geared more for your work because most of us have to field those really ridiculous calls that are nuts. And you may work 24 hours to help somebody, but at the end of the day, they don't feel like you helped them, and they just yell at you some more. And there's just some minor things that we can change in our language and the way we respond where we can actually work a little easier, and people will actually believe and feel that you serve them because you have. That's it.
So I mean, you're right. It does sound like that has broad implications kind of in our life. What are some common communication, like where do things break down at where we start to go askew unintentionally?
You know what? I don't really care about making money in the book, so I'll just give it to you. It's really just five things. First one is repeat the need. When someone has an issue, when you tell them back what they wanted, first they realize that you're listening and you can actually make sure that you know what they actually need. Second one would be assurance of a solution. Just let people know that you're going to help them. Not that you actually have a solution, because chances are you don't. You might have to go do some research. Might have to figure something out. Just give them an assurance like, we've got this. Here are some things I'm going to go through for you. See, I've already forgotten the other ones now because I'm on the spot.
Actually, the first two are a great improvement over what I normally do. So,
That's the truth. I've been with Mike at a Panera Bread, and it's really awkward.
So the next one would be just a time frame of a response. Let people know when you're going to get back to them. And when you say it, actually call them back. That's actually step five, integrity. Let your yes be yes and your no be no.
Yep.
And number four, which we skipped over, was say thank you. Gratitude goes a long way, not just for the person that you're talking to, but for yourself. When you have a thankful heart, you've got a happy heart. Thank you, VeggieTales.
No doubt.
Right on. So that translates, though, even out of corporate America into your marriages and stuff. Like, I don't know. So what are some ways that people can start seeing impact in those types of things?
You know what? I'll give you a good one. This one's right out of the book. Imagine this scenario, because this scenario never happens. You've got a husband and a wife, no kids, and he wants to take a nap in his hammock because he's had a long Saturday mowing lawn, or it didn't really matter what he was doing because it doesn't really matter what we do.
Touche.
But he goes, I love you, honey. I'm serious. That wasn't a dig.
Hey, but that's why they call him the digger.
By the way, I've got an amazing wife, Julie, at home that lets me do all these things. She is awesome. So, hello, honey. Love you. So he wants to take a nap on his hammock, and his wife's working on something. There's a table there, and it's a glass table, and it's kind of wobbly. And she's like, hey, honey, can you fix this table for me? And he says, sure, I'll fix that later. And she goes, okay. And then he drifts off to sleep. 4 hours later, he wakes up to a crashing table, and she goes, oh, you do nothing that you say you're going to do. You said you're going to fix this table, and you didn't. Then the table falls over, it crashes. You fall out of your hammock, you're bleeding, you run up, and you're like, what's wrong? She goes, I hate you. And she runs back into the house, and you're bleeding, going, I had like 7 hours of later. What's going on? And your rest of your night just sucks over one tiny little thing.
Right out of my diary, man.
That's all of us, brother. It's okay. It's not just marriage. I just use that one because most people can relate to that. Now let's switch that around. Hey, honey, can you fix this table? Sure. Do you mind if I fix that around 12 o'clock? She's going to do one of two things. She's either going to say, nope, I need a fix now. Which, as a loving husband, you'll be like, okay, sweet, I'm going to get it done because you love her. Or she's going to say, no problem. And then you drift off to sleep. She goes works on something else. You come back at 1 o'clock. You fix the table. Everyone's happy. Eat some popcorn. Watch a movie. And your marriage is awesome. Just because of one tiny little ambiguous thing of saying later. No. Give it a time. It clears up everything.
Hey, man, the first one had bleeding, and the second one did not.
No.
I feel like the second one is solid.
There's a pros and cons list with the way that he handled each situation. And it seems like situation number two was much more beneficial.
Yeah.
By
yeah.
doing, and here's the deal, like, that's part of the integrity thing, right? Like, that's part of, that's part, like what, that your later actually does mean later, and that you thought about it, and you do mean later. You're just not shoving off and saying, yeah, I'll get to it. Here's the deal, like, I made a mistake. I wouldn't call it a mistake, but I explained to my wife the way that my brain works. And I've generalized it, unfortunately, very correctly, because this is how I work, but, like, I take in a gobs amount of information, and within 2 seconds, I've categorized it. Of stuff that I need to keep track of and stuff I don't. And there's a lot of stuff that falls into the stuff that I didn't think was important at the time, and I shelved it. I put it somewhere, and I don't recall it. The good stuff I'll file away. Well, unfortunately, that means that, like, sometimes what I thought was important and what others think are important are not on the same intake. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so I have to, A, admit to that right off the bat, and B, try to distinguish between I just didn't listen to you opposed to I took what you were saying, I just shelved it as something that was not going to be of consequence later. And I think some of the things that you're saying will actually help define the way that I deal with things just off the bat, right? Like the way that you take stuff in, the way that you respond to things, and the way that you purposely go out with integrity and market what it is. I don't know. I think that whole process would be helpful.
Right. I think a lot of times we try to get away with vague integrity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Because if I say later, and later could be a bunch of different stuff, and mm-hmm. I can fulfill that and feel like, but I said later. That's the phrase you want to
Dang,
use. To
I
your
do that
loved
with
ones.
My kids all the time.
That's what I was thinking. I did.
This
my
is
kids
getting
a lot.
Convicting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Later. Yeah,
so like it's a hey, we value integrity. We just don't want to be held real firm to whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So we're real vague about the things that we say, about the things that we promise, and like. I don't know about you, but I've never been in the situation where I've done something like that, and I felt legitimately vindicated or positive when I said, I know you're upset, but if you recall, I said later, not necessarily this afternoon.
Yeah, it's the duality of man of wanting to not be held accountable, but still be someone that you can be looked upon as reliable.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cheap.
Don't buy this book. We don't want that word out.
Man, yeah, shoot, I think I'm guilty of that.
Seriously, I don't want to talk about it anymore. I feel very convicted. I did this correctly once today, and I failed at it also. My daughter asked me like at 8:30, and I leave for this show at 9. She said, do you want to play Battleship with me? I'm like, I would love to play Battleship with you. I don't think that we have enough time to do it correctly. I would have to leave halfway through. So do you think we could do it tomorrow night, like after dinner? And she said, sure. So I nailed it on that one.
Yeah.
The other daughter asked me if I could sit down and watch some Minecraft videos with her because she was watching Minecraft stuff. And I said, yeah, we'll do it later. I'm sorry I don't have time right now. That was vague, and I really had no intention of doing it.
And it's not that we're going to be perfect. We're going to screw up, but when you're intentional about it, and the reality is it makes you manage your time better. You realize you're going to have to say no sometimes, and then you'll prioritize what's actually important in your life, and that works at that, and then it rolls over to work then. When you tell a client, hey, I'm going to take care of it this time, you can prioritize your entire day based on giving timelines.
I like this brand of the reason I like this brand of thinking so much is because it's living life on purpose, mm-hmm. right? Instead of by a whim of wind-blown hairs. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's on purpose. I'm saying yes to this. Mm-hmm. I'm
honest.
Saying no to this. Mm-hmm. It's honest. And it causes you to take... to deal with people and yourself in a little bit more integrity than you probably have been. Go ahead.
I say yes to everything, even though I know I put it on the same shelf you do. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I would love to do that.
I'll probably forget this, but right. Sure, maybe.
That's it.
Sure, maybe. Ah, crap.
You know, that is a good point, though. It's like when you talk about it from a time management perspective, right? Like if everything is nebulous, you have no idea how much time you actually have or do not have, right? But if you're firm about something, I am doing this tomorrow, not even this week, but like this is going on tomorrow, this is happening on Friday, you know, I know whether my Friday is taken up or not. Because, like, now that I'm thinking about this, I got three things that I said are going to get done this week. I don't think they're getting done this week. I think I know right now that they're not going to happen this week. Mm-hmm. And, like, either I need to find a place to stick them or I need to call the guy who I said I was going to do this thing and say, hey, it's not happening this week, man. And at least that's an honest thing where that guy can actually deal with the reaction for me saying that ain't going to happen versus just a random thing where, like, oh, I might be able to, you know, squeeze it in when I very well know that it ain't going to happen.
Yeah, but the sooner he knows that, the better he can plan out his week
yep,
and
you
still
got
be
it.
Successful.
And why is this so hard?
Gets rid of fear.
Why do we have such a hard time with this? Like, it's literally the narrow gate to get this done for most people.
Yeah, but you're taking options away from yourself.
That's true.
It's way easier to just say yes and not do it. It's way easier. You look.
It ends the conversation. You go on. Everybody's happy.
No, that's true. Done. You fixed a problem, which was me having to talk about this right now.
Right.
And you solved that by saying yes.
You know what it is? It's because it's it remains it's a short-term gain, completely ignoring the long-term impact of what we're doing.
Yeah.
In fact, Chris Roloff, the guy who runs the station, and I were talking on Saturday about even forgiveness. That part of the message of people understanding the forgiveness of Jesus is being lost simply because people don't know what real forgiveness looks like, right? They don't – like real forgiveness, the way that we react to things generally has to do with like, hey, I'm sorry. Oh, it's okay. Well, no, it's not. The thing that you did was not okay. Like it caused harm. It caused grief. It's not okay. It is what it is. It was harmful. However, I forgive you, right? Like that is way different than something – than dismissing and acting like it didn't actually have an impact. And like what we've come to look as forgiveness in our society has largely been things like it's okay. Like whatever I've done, I'm just going to diminish the actual impact of it as opposed to saying it had the very impact that you said it did or that I'm feeling right now, but I'm forgiving that. As opposed to the other way around. And so, like, the thing, I think the forgiveness of Jesus doesn't necessarily ring deep for some people is because they're used to God looking at their lives. They want him to look at it and say, whatever you're doing, I'm okay with, as opposed to whatever you're doing is harmful, but I forgive it anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is like the core of that message gets missed when we look at forgiveness the wrong way. And it's the same basic principle of saying we fought for the short term. The short term, I just want to feel better, so I want you to tell me it's all right, as opposed to the long term benefit of knowing that I have harmed someone. And in deep love, they look back at me and said, I love you and I forgive you for that harm that you caused. I mean, that's a long term perspective and a much deeper thing than just saying, it was no problem. No problem. Yeah, it was. No, you know, that's what I'm saying. So, like, I think it's just we're fighting for, like, short-term things to make things right quickly as opposed to make them – actually putting them to rights fully. And we're missing out on that by engaging in that level of discussion, engaging in that level of understanding and contemplation about the things that we do.
You know, the same probably proves true with that thing that we were talking about earlier, though, about the stagnation of the church, right? Like, it's people taking the high C instead of waiting for the grape juice. You know what I'm saying? Like taking the short term, just the visiting the church, right? Like just showing up and I'm kind of part of this thing. I'm half invested. I kind of understand what you're saying, opposed to like applying the principles that Christ lays down and actually letting that joy actually do its work and become a truer and more integrity driven version of what Christ is offering.
So this all actually kind of leads into the tenor of my Pope style. Somebody introduce Pope style and then I'll take it.
So what has happened recently is, in the local crawls and in the local bars, a bunch of people have been talking about the Pope being in town and the Pope actually living here. And they actually believe that Ben is the Pope. A bunch of people have showed up on Ben's lawn expecting him to give some kind of advice that the Pope would give. And they're looking for something for him to speak into his life, into their life. And so they've come upon his lawn and they're not going to leave until he gives them something that pertains to his life, but they can take away from and go be better people. So, just, Pope Ben, go ahead.
Just to clarify, Ben is not the actual
Pope.
The actual Pope.
No.
Okay. That's a given.
I've been mistaken for the Pope.
Whoa. He does wear the hats.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wears the hats.
The Pope doesn't have a hat with the air conditioning like I have. Oh. Mine's got the air. Here's the deal. I got this hat for free from the Colorado Visitor Center, and I love it. It's one of my favorite hats, but it's junk style. And so like, I either have to visit Colorado or see if I can talk to him about sending me one or something. So I don't know if they're going to do that or not. Anyway.
Hey, man, you're the most street-level Pope I've ever met.
all right, so here's my Pope style advice. And I give it to you from the perspective – like I've used this phrase recently when it comes to the church, actually, when it comes to our church. And I was thinking about it as it applies to my own life. And so I'm giving it to you so that you'll get off my lawn. And here's my Pope style advice. It's time to stop setting milestones and start walking miles. Because I think – what we run into is we run into a life where we just want to get a grasp of what we're supposed to do. Like, how can I think of the right thing to do, the right direction that my life is to move? Can I imagine what my life is supposed to be, the things that I value? I want a good marriage. I want to provide for my family. I want to do what God has me to do. And we've got all these things that we're constantly pondering what it is that we want to do with our lives and figuring out what our goals should be and all that. And I think one of our hindrances to actually showing any productivity in our life or growing the kingdom or even following through what God has for us is that we spend a lot of time setting milestones and we're never actually walking miles. we want to figure out the we spend a lot of time figuring out the guideposts. Where should I be? How do I measure up? Where am I going? And that's great. But if you're not ever actually going there, like there's no product, there's no fruit in your life. And so at some point you have to stop setting milestones and start walking miles. And the reason that hit me this week is there's like, I don't know, four or five random things that I have, habits in my life that I randomly kind of touch on every once in a while. I feel like, oh, I'm going to do better at this. I'm going to get some exercise. Or I'm going to stop drinking caffeine. Caffeine is like ravaging my stomach. I'm having nervous, anxious problems. And like, I have it anyway. And caffeine makes it way worse. And like, I think I got to give up caffeine and I got to start going to bed when I'm supposed to and getting up when I'm supposed to get to work on time. And the one of them was, if I tell someone I'm going to do something, I actually have to, you know, keep my promises, similar to what Dominic's been talking about. And the truth is that like, I've been holding all those in tandem as things that yes, I'm going to do at some point. And the truth is I'm going to be 85 and I would have had set some really solid milestones for my life and I will have walked 0 miles. And I want people to be impressed by my milestones. I want to, hey, I'm working on being a good husband. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm working on following Christ like I'm supposed to, and I'm working on giving up my kingdom and taking on his, and here's what I'm going to do. But I never actually walked the mile. I never actually fully committed to just doing the things that I that I know I am to be doing. And so my milestones are worthless if I'm not walking miles, because then I'm just marking nothing. I'm marking the things in my mind of things that I would like to do. And I think that's true even in our life following Christ is as a church, it kind of goes to the thing you were talking about, Mike. If you, on a Sunday morning, you soak all this stuff in and you're like, 90% of the church on a Sunday morning can walk out and be like, yes, I agree with my mouth. Where did my foot take me the next 10 minutes? Right? Where did my conversation go the following day? We set some milestones and said, here's the Beatitudes, but no one wants to be the Beatitude guy. No one wants to hunger and thirst for righteousness. Hey, we're supposed to feed the orphan. We're supposed to take care of the widow. Oh, good, 10% of the church is doing that? We're not walking miles. We're just agreeing on cool milestones that Jesus also agrees with, and we just like to be in agreement with Jesus. And so the thing is, at some point, We've got to move from saying we really dig and agree on these milestones to just start walking miles, and maybe that's not as flashy. Maybe that's it doesn't come in a package campaign, and we don't get all these things where we get to say here. I'm not saying goals are bad necessarily, but what I'm saying is that like I think we're too infatuated with looking at where we're going or marking the things of which we intend to do, and we're simply not doing a lot of mile walking. And we don't get exercise, and we get fat, and we get lazy, and we get tired when real stuff happens. And that is very much impacting me in my own life, even just on basic habits, some of it in my spiritual life. I think I've seen some of that stuff in the church, and I'm just thinking that it's beyond me even. And so my Pope-style advice is to it's time to stop setting milestones and start walking miles. What do you think, fellas?
I feel like you've just described at least half of the meetings I've ever been in where everyone gets together, they all discuss it, and everyone's on the same page, and everyone leaves the meeting, and nothing actually gets done. It's just everyone came to a consensus about what they'd all like to do or they'd all like to see take place, but without any kind of actual tangible action steps and a breakdown of, all right, here's exactly what we're going to do, when we're going to do it, who is going to do it, and just those specific details, with everything just left out in that nebulous, you know, someday, some way, somehow.
Yeah.
We'll come back and revisit it a month later. And it's like, hey, we still want to deal those things, right? Yeah, we want to. Well, all right. See you guys next month, and we'll talk about the same thing.
Then you have another meeting and talk about other stuff, and, you know, and nothing ever gets done. Yeah, you're right.
Right.
It just makes me think about while you were talking and saying, going the miles rather than setting the milestones. It just made me think about when Jesus sends out the 72, and I can imagine like one dude going, okay, well, what are our goals for this entire situation, Jesus? Can we sit down and have a meeting about how we're going to get there and what all we're going to do, and what exactly do you mean by walk, and what do you mean by kick the dust out? Like, what do I need to do? And I find myself identifying with that with my faith a lot is I'd be the guy that goes, all right, Jesus, I need the 10-step plan on how we're doing this. And they didn't really ask for that. They just
started what's my demon
walking.
Quota? How many am I supposed to cast?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They kind of just started walking.
Yeah.
And he said, well, go out into the towns and tell them that the kingdom is near and the kingdom is at hand. Go. And I feel like I'd be the guy that's just like, hey, man, what are we going to do, Jesus? Can we talk about this before
I
head
You're
out?
Not shaking the dust off your foot right. I think it's more of a shake
exactly.
a wiggle.
Hey, Jesus, I know you...
How do you like my
dust
shaking technique?
But can we have a meeting about what our goals are for this entire situation? Rather than just saying, hey, go and walk. I feel like I need a little bit more structure, Jesus.
Who's the next best example in the Bible besides Jesus for exactly what Ben's talking about? Answer, Enoch. Enoch walks the miles. How many milestones that guy got? Yeah. His only milestone was he walked faithfully with the Lord for like 300 years. That Enoch was the only milestone he set. Other than that, he was just walking miles.
That's the truth. Enoch walked with the Lord for 300 years. And then God
I've got
just
to
like,
see what this guy looks like.
Great job, Enoch. Come on up.
Yeah, that's it. What did you accomplish? Doesn't matter. I did it faithfully for 300 years. Come pick me up.
And I don't know. I think that talks to one of the things that you were discussing, Dominic, was... you know, regardless of what comes out on the other end, we go because we're supposed to go. And I think a lot of times we think we don't need more than that, but what we're actually doing in our lives, the good works that we were saved for, we're waiting for context. We want to know what Jesus has got going on. We want to see the end. I mean, and what was the Pope style 2 weeks ago? Was it like, it's our constant, be faithful in means, God will handle the ends. And being faithful to means that you're walking miles. Because that's what being faithful in the means is. You're walking through the means. You're doing the work and letting God kind of take care of whatever goes from there. And the thing is like, it's not like we don't have advice. It's like, Jesus, it's been the same thing for a couple centuries now. Mm-hmm. Wait, it's not centuries. What's the thousand?
Millennium.
A couple millennia.
A couple, at least 200 years.
Yeah. Literally a couple.
At least 48 years that they've been playing.
Ever since America was formed, we've gotten this coming.
When God's country came.
I was trying to go from only when the KJV was printed.
1611.
Okay, so at least 400 years God's word has been in practice. No, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's
not sexy, though. Yeah. That's the problem. We want the new thing. We want the new, what's the new fad, the new excitement, and that's why we keep going for new goals and new things, and it's like, how about just be faithful?
Yeah, poor in spirit. Obey. Pick it up and walk with it.
The new that's exactly right, like the new discipleship program from Lifeway Church. Whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, let's try the old one. It worked for Jesus. We don't need a new fancy way. We just need to walk it. For what we got.
I was thinking that on the way here, actually. It was in my mind. I was thinking, you know, like, what are we thinking? What are we thinking when we're always looking for something new? And it's like, you know, have we tried Jesus' program yet? Like, have we actually tried submitting to the thing that Jesus said to do? Because the thing is, like, some of that stuff is hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say, give up everything in my life and let Jesus do what he wants with it. And, like, have you tried that yet? Because any other ideas outside of that, if you're not willing to do that, I'm not really all that interested in.
But that's the thing, is that what you're prescribing is not good for small group attendance. You walk in to people like, hey, I'm just trying to feel out your church. You're like, here's what we're asking. Actually, more pointedly, here's what Jesus is asking.
Yeah,
I don't know if this is for me. You guys are creepy.
Does Jesus have a version 2.0 of his plan? It's like, you didn't even try the first plan.
We have a sweet pamphlet.
You didn't do 1.0. What makes you think Jesus feels the need to do 1.1?
Can someone update and improve on this guy? I mean,
which is what we've been trying to do ever since we made the printing press. We got it right when we printed the Bible, and then after that, we just came up with pamphlets and new curriculum, and here's a new way to look at it. And we're like, well, let's try the Jesus' way to look at it and see if we can get some. Because, what's the constant worry, right, that you're spreading the gospel and you're making no disciples? Yeah. You're telling everybody about Jesus, but Jesus was able to make disciples, people that lived in the kingdom, people that promoted the kingdom, people that talked about the king, right? And our worry is that you're throwing it out to a bunch of deaf ears. But the problem is like we're not giving people or asking people what Jesus is asking of them, right? You're giving them less and giving them an option to set a bunch of milestones and say, well, are you being nicer to your coworkers? Well, you know, I feel like Jesus will make that change in you. It's not a benchmark for you to make. Your goal is to follow Jesus faithfully in the meet, and he'll work that out through you, right?
Well, I mean, I suppose that's the thing, though, is like if you what we're giving them are the milestones, and they look at your life and like, well, that guy's not walking miles.
Yeah, what do you know? You're no Enoch.
which here's the deal is like it's not like your works save another guy. But the truth is that if you tell me that something is true, and then I look at your life and say, I don't see anything, like truth impacts you. It changes who you are. It changes what you do. And so if it's true, I would expect it to do something. And like that's the Ephesians 2:10, right? Like if you're saved by faith for good works and you're saved and you're not doing good works, then the question is like what is it actually you're believing in that doesn't change your life whatsoever?
Yeah.
And so if you try to tell somebody else that, yeah, Jesus changes everything and I look at your life and not everything has changed, I'm like either you're a liar or Jesus is a liar. pick one. And like they like it's easier to point a finger at Jesus because they don't know Jesus. They don't want to call me a liar that we have lunch. And so who gets the shaft?
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't end up saving my neighbors or my friends, but my life gives credibility to the message that I go out and tell them. So if I'm going around saying, hey, God loves you in a dramatic and radical way, and I'm only showing them this love that's just so casual and so very commonplace that's expected, then my message and my lifestyle are just in two totally different worlds.
Right.
And there's no credibility to it.
Right. This is actually kind of the message that me and Melinda being on the road have been hearing continually this whole week, that it's our salvation is what sanctifies us, but it's justified by our actions.
Right.
If you don't have that, then where's your faith then?
Yeah.
You know, do you really have it? And then that's scary. Well, no, I don't want to have that conversation. No. Hold on.
But there's a practical implication to it. I mean, yeah, we agree that you are saved and it's entirely by the works of Jesus, but it's something that should be transformative. And if your life is not being transformed, then it's entirely in response to something. So maybe there's an aspect of the gospel that is still yet to pierce your heart that you need to be seeking out God and let him change you, let him transform you, because otherwise you're just living a life that's a reflection of yourself and not a reflection of him.
Right. I mean, you're certainly missing out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, take the salvation debate off the table.
Mm-hmm.
If those are the things that you believe and your life isn't being transformed by it, then you're missing out on the experience of living in the mm-hmm. kingdom. You mm-hmm. just know what it's supposed to be like and pine for it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's a rough life, knowing it, like, that's right around the corner, and all, it's whatever is lacking in that turning it and actually kingdom living. That's rough times to live on the edge. And that's what's weird is like so often these reactions that I think we see in life is people are living the harder life. They're living the harder life because they understand everything and they say, I believe that thing. But because of what they're not willing to give up, they're on the precipice of living in a delightful existence within the kingdom of God, in which people knowingly and willingly sacrifice their lives to say, the king knows what's going on. I'm willing to do this thing. And like that's the thought process that can end up with a guy who's living in the kingdom. And we live on this peripheral edge that says, I'm not willing to give it up. And so like that's a very weird spot to live your life where you're constantly conflicted about wanting to fight for your own kingdom, knowing that God's kingdom is the right one. And then you're like, that just seems like a terrible way to go about your business.
Mm-hmm.
And like you don't really exist anywhere. And like that's the story of your Matthew, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your tax collector who doesn't live anywhere. He's on the periphery of the Jewish society because he's a tax collector. And the Rome, he's just doing their bidding. They'll find another guy to do it. He doesn't mean anything to them either. He exists nowhere. But the man finds a place where his life actually begins in the company of Christ and doing his work going forward. And he's willing to die for it. And like it's just living on those edges. I think we just don't realize that we're living on those edges, and that our lives are much harder than they are simply because we're trying to hold to both. When if we can just give up what our kingdom and move over your life, that burden is still light. The earthly consequence may be fierce, but the burden itself is still light, and we're carrying a lot more than we have to simply because we're trying to stand on the edge. All right.
One thing that I found universally true is that everyone, no matter what context they've had with God, there's always something deeper that God can call you to. Either you've had no context whatsoever and you're about to take your first steps of faith, or maybe it's something that you've been faithfully just doing whatever God says to do for the past 20 years, but there's always something deeper. That there's more more blessings, more something that he can call you to. And we have this aversion to say, okay, God, I'm not sure I want to trust you deeper just because it's so new, it's so different, and I'm so used to this old, comfortable way of doing things. But we're always being challenged by that of, are you willing to step into the deeper things of God? Are you willing to take deeper steps and run faster in his kingdom and just be more dependent on him with your life? And usually these are uncomfortable steps, but they're something that build upon each other as we are chasing after this Christ-like life. And it's awesome and scary and wonderful. And love it.
All right. All right. All right. That's the Pope style. Start walking miles. I'm working on it. I'm working on walking miles a day.
Yeah.
No pot for 2 days. Pete's. And I reinstituted No Bible, No Breakfast.
Okay. Hey, that's no Bible, No Breakfast is fierce. I like it.
I can see that saving someone's life one day. Like, well, that man, he gave up caffeine. I believe in Christ.
I love Jesus.
That's true. You could apply your book principles on delivering the gospel almost right off the bat. Like, restate the problem. You don't know Jesus. I'll give you a time frame. I can help you. I'm going to tell you about it right now. Thank you for asking. What was step five?
Integrity.
Integrity
to actually do it.
Tell the truth about the gospel. Don't be making crap up.
All right, you're listening live from The Path. Hey, thanks for joining us so far. We are talking with Dominic Cox with the Ministry of Driven 11. So you can pick up Perception Matters. If you see him, if you find him in person, if you go to driven11.com, I assume they can find out where you're at?
Yes, sir.
Okay, sweet. So if you can see him in person, you can pick this thing up. Are you out? Are you out of copies?
What? Oh, I'm out of the official release of the book is actually August 8th, and it'll be available everywhere. Amazon, Kindles, whatever you want.
Right. So after the official release, you can pick it up just about any place. If you see him on the road, though, he had some pre-release copies.
No doubt.
Yep. You can also go to Tate Publishing. It's the only other place you can get pre-release copies.
Okay, sweet. TatePublishing.com. You can pick that. You're looking for Perception Matters by Dominic Cox. And also, you can pick up that EP, go to Driven 11, and everywhere fine music is sold and distributed, you can pick up the album there. All right, before we hit up on a station break, let's hear one more tune. What do you got for us?
Actually, it's going to be exactly what we're talking about. It's called Passenger. I'll let it speak for itself. Oh, look at that. I got a tune. It's hot in here.
Thank you.
I do my best.
I thought I was the only one that made that joke.
What was the problem again? I'd like to help.
Thought I knew my way, had it all figured out. I was going and going, now slowing down. Kept turning left when I should have turned right. Always getting blinded by them brake lights. Had to crash and burn for me to see my need. And I'm giving you my life, I want you to drive. Oh, I'm just a passenger, and I've given you my soul, living up control. Oh, I'm just a passenger. Oh, oh, oh. You took the mess I made, the wreckage that was me, and you gave me freedom, freedom. Now all I want is what you want for me. And I'm giving you my life, I want you to drive. Oh, I'm just a passenger, and I'm giving you my soul, giving up control. Oh, I'm just a passenger. Oh, oh, oh. And I'm giving you my life, I want you to drive. And I'm giving you my life, I want you to drive. Oh, 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 oh. And I'm giving you my soul, giving up control. Here we go. Oh. Job, everybody. That's cool.
Hey, I hope you wanted us to sing along.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
We didn't really ask prior to us doing
you
it.
You guys brought in the gang vocals. That was cool.
Hey, man, we got to sing along with this.
We're
like, all right, let's
we're needed,
that.
Boys. Here's the deal. We really looked out because we do OOOs and everybody that comes in here. And it just happened to fit the tune you were singing.
Yeah.
It's been really awkward other times.
If there's a section of O's, we are on it.
You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org, broadcasting every Monday night from 10-ish to ish.
Yeah. Here we go. Saturdays at 7 p.m. on the Truth Network, 99.3 FM. If you are listening on the Truth Network, we've got to let you go. Big thanks to Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower team. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com for all your home buying and selling needs. If you're listening to the podcast, we'll be right back with you with more from Driven 11. Be faithful in the means. God will take care of the ends. Thanks for listening to Life from the Path. There she goes. What's going on?
Whoa. See, it doesn't fit everywhere.
Oh, shoot. I should have done. I was trying to think of my reaction to that. To that Faith Value Summit thing, or the leadership...
Why are you doing it on the podcast, Ben?
I should have done it on the radio. Mistake. I'm going to tell you a little bit about this, and then I'll give you my reaction, and then we can go... We didn't get into the articles. We're going to have to wait on those articles.
Hey, this is where you've lost your integrity. You do this every week. We're going to talk about these articles.
Bringing it back full circle.
I thought we were going to get to them.
Make your stuff time-bound, man.
I had every intention.
Here's the thing. The problem is we get to talk about something, and then you slam the side of your armrest, and you go, I'm going to tell you something else. And then you go,
you just need legs. That's the problem. So I went to this this Family Leadership Summit. It does a couple things. So, like, the stated goal of the thing was kind of talk about basically family issues, right? Mm-hmm. Except there were like 10 of the presidential candidates that were there that were vying for the Republican nomination. Although the deal was you couldn't like stump. It was kind of a cool format, actually. Like, what they did was basically they brought the guys up there, and then there was a moderator who was a guy with Fox News that was asking that was basically helping moderate the conversation. But they basically went around the audience, and the audience got to ask the questions. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't filter these guys; they just picked people. And then they got to ask questions. And some of these questions were pretty interesting. That's the one that got, like I said, got Donald Trump in trouble. And then they'd ask him whether he'd ever asked for forgiveness. And he basically said no. Which, I mean, you got to know your room, man. That's a weird place to say.
You're standing
like
in the middle of evangelical right Iowa. You know what I'm saying?
No, although here's the deal. There are people like, I can't believe he said that and in this audience. But the truth is, like, I'd rather he be honest about it.
That's truth.
Like, he said the truth. No, I haven't. Okay. I'd rather than him shilling in front of the whole audience, but anyway, like, one of the things that I noticed, like, there was a lot of people there. There were a lot of guys talking about things that otherwise I would agree with. I think, generally speaking, I think we agree because I think they're pointing to say here's what the Bible thinks is important. Here's what our lives should look like. Here's the types of moral things that we care about. But I think it narrowed in as to what there was something about that made me uncomfortable. The when I was there, and I thought, I just I don't know if this is doing anything. I don't know if we're actually being productive. And some of it goes to we're just talking about a bunch of stuff, and that we're not actually, you know, doing the thing and making a difference in the things that we're talking about. And I think that came to a head. There was I heard two or three people. There were some guys out there protesting to defund Planned Parenthood. Okay, there were some free thinkers out there who are basically, I'm a voter too. Although they don't seem to vote Republican, so like I think they were in the wrong area. But they were trying to make the point that keep your religion out of my stuff. I vote too. And so anyway, there are people kind of interacting with these two groups of people that were arguing, and people that were coming in that were trying to engage the free. And I heard like three or four people goes like, "Hey man, did you engage the free thinkers or did you engage the atheists?" And I thought, "Oh mercy." And they're like, "Yeah, oh yeah, I love doing that stuff." I'm like, "Oh." This is why. This is putting a definition on the things that I don't care for right here. And so I heard people telling stories, and the stories were basically, I love to talk to those guys. Like, they're dead in the water. And like, I tell, you know, we had a decent conversation, and then, you know, really kind of put him in his place. And like, I heard numerous stories like that throughout the day. And at the end of the day, I think, I can't remember who I was talking to, but we were kind of talking about that. And I said, you know, like, if my whole takeaway from this is that, like, we may agree, as for example, that the guy that doesn't believe in God is I think he doesn't believe the right thing. Okay, I think we agree there. But like, are we moving the needle at all here? And by engaging a guy and be like, ha, you're wrong, and like that guy didn't change his mind, he didn't change your mind, that guy doesn't know the love of Jesus. I mean, what did we do? What did we get together and do? When we had this big deal where people are asking questions, we're like, oh, now I know where so-and-so stands. I'm like, okay. I mean, I'm not saying there's not value to understanding who you might be voting for or, like, what they believe. But, like, maybe it fits in with my Pope's advice, but it felt like a bunch of milestones. people talking about the thing, the place they should be, the thing how they wish it would. Like, there's been people, you know, they're flailing about the Supreme Court stuff, and like, and the, their ways of solving a problem of people who aren't listening to a Holy Spirit, right? Like, are basically finding other ways to make the American government their Holy Spirit. And that's what we're fighting for. And, like, that guy, like, maybe you do that. Maybe you succeed. And that guy still doesn't know Jesus. And I thought, like, we've kind of talked about that stuff before. I just, it's weird to be in a group of people where I feel like if you were to give us a test on the things that we believe, I mean, damn it, we'd come dead on. Like, we'd come real close on the stuff that we believe. All right? But, like, the things that we're spending time and energy and money to influence, that I'm just not confident that we're actually helping people know Jesus and that we're even following him in the process. And, like, I say that probably a little vaguely because, like, I can't speak on behalf of all those people there. Like, I just can't. But as a group, I just feel like our output reflects things that aren't as concerned about helping people know who Christ is. And we're claiming the wrong victories. We put an atheist in their place. Well, as long as their place is hell, I'm glad you worked on it, right? But I don't want him there. I think he should go somewhere else. Did we do any work to that? Did we make any progress on that guy? There was one of the guys that was doing one of the end of the broadcast towards the end of the day, and he was talking about one of his. He said, "Do you want to surprise an atheist? You love him. You care about them. You care about what they have to say. You care about what they think. You discuss with them things that they find important." He goes, "There's a guy, he's a well known atheist, I think in the South somewhere." And he goes, "I go on that guy's podcast, and he comes on my radio show, because I care about what he thinks. Yeah, do I disagree on anything? Sure, right? But I care about what he thinks because I care about him, and like, it's a people thing, and so, it's not fair probably to extrapolate that on the event." It's probably not fair necessarily to extrapolate on the people that I like. I know some people at the event. And I know where their hearts are at, I think. But I just wonder if sometimes we lose a little bit of perspective on the effort that we put into events like that. And then we talked about you got 10, I bet it's even less of people that are actively engaged in widows and orphans work, that are actively engaged in saying, look at how Jesus describes people that live in his kingdom. Look at these Beatitudes. I'm fighting for that, for me and for the people around me. And I don't know. That's what I walked away from. It was just a little bit uncomfortable with the time and energy that we're spending that I'm not sure actually accomplishes what deep down I think we all want to accomplish. I just wonder if we're diverted a little bit. So that was, I don't know. That was kind of my reaction for having been there.
Yeah, it's kind of disheartening. I used to be in the middle of all that myself. And maybe it's just having a few decades in on the game when you look back and go, none of it mattered. None of it. You know, all the fighting and the passion and this guy has to believe this and believe that. And we're going to get the right guy in and he's going to really move the bar for whatever moral issue. And it never gets moved, you know, because they usually they're just pandering to the believers anyway. So it's like, why are we even playing that game? It doesn't matter. Let's say they get every law in that we like, yeah. Right? It doesn't send anyone to heaven. We failed. We've completely failed as a church, and we spent all that energy worried about that, which was good. It was moral. We got some good morals, but they're not Christ followers, and that's what we're supposed to be making. That's what we're called to do is make disciples, not change the laws of the land. And I don't know. It really hit me just in the recent years, you know. Excuse me. Where I really kind of changed my heart on the whole thing. It's like, I've wasted decades.
You know, isn't that the grand prize golden apple of the ruler of this world, right? Because like the beginning, the new church, directly descended from Christ and started by the disciples, right? Like they lived in an oppressive kingdom where it wasn't even a thought that they were going to change the land they live in. Right, they never thought we need to improve the Roman government, and if we can just get them to do these things and live this way, things will be better.
Different book.
You know what I'm saying? Stephen's like, if only I were a senator, I could straighten this world out.
And so, and then you look at what we have, and what we have is a secret hope in the possibility that that the country we live in or whatever democratic society we're part of will operate as God's kingdom here on earth until Christ comes back and finally just runs the place. But until then, we will run a smaller version. And like, there's an odd hope in every democratic society that the Christians in that nation that we're going to pull that off. It's not going to happen. You know what I'm saying? But we live in that. If we can just get Christians in the political system, we'll have it. If we can just get Christians in places of authority, then we'll have it. And like, it really is like an odd, foolish endeavor that we don't see it for what it is, right? But if I was the ruler of this world and I wanted you to think that maybe get your attention off where it needed to be, maybe I'll say, look, there is an opportunity to set up Christ's kingdom on his behalf. Would you like to do that? I sure would. And I'll spend my life getting that set up.
I'll do it, Stan. He calls him Stan.
He calls him Stan.
The body of Christ has made this just a weird way to do it. If you think about this, it's they have decided that, or unfortunately, it seems like we've decided that...
You should own the problem, Boova. It's you.
It's
say,
me.
I have decided.
I have decided. Yeah, exactly. Make more chances for me to say the word I, Mike. Great job. So... We have decided that going for a moral America, which we've talked about many times in the show, going for a moral America is the best way to do this. We've decided that for some reason. We've decided that rather than finding a nation of disciples and a nation of people who honestly and earnestly seek the heart of Christ, we've decided that that is the worse situation rather than finding a nation of people that might lead us out of it by making laws. It makes absolutely no sense.
Well, I mean, here's the deal. I mean, give people some credit. Like, I think they're well-intentioned, right?
Oh, yeah. Agree.
They have the idea that the easiest way to influence something on a broad scale is to impact the laws of the nation, right?
Agreed.
And there's level, and there's also, don't get me wrong, that within the nation's laws, there's levels of protection here. Like, sometimes you set laws that people would reject for moral reasons that I would still fight for simply for protection. Abortion laws would be one of them, right? I care about that. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I mean, you're right. We've invested in the wrong thing to make significant change. We've invested in building fences and not, you know, helping to make sure that people aren't stealing the chickens within the fence.
That's what I'm saying. If we go out and we decide that rather than trying to change the laws and change the infrastructure, we change the people involved in it, we're not going to have to rally for laws. If we have a nation full of believers that are disciples and doing Christ-centered work, we no longer have to rally for different laws that are going to be there. It's going to happen. It's not something that we need to worry about from an infrastructure perspective.
Right. It's actually the same. It's the same understanding of the way to reduce legalism of the church is to point people to Christ and let the Holy Spirit do His work.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's the same basic premise. Is like as opposed to spending all our time figuring out what guardrails to set in people's lives and making sure we put guys in there to hit them when they get them wrong, is point them to Jesus and be a community. It's not like there's nothing about being a community. Sometimes your community is your guardrail, and Christ would push you back on them to do that. But like, we don't need to be legalists. The Holy Spirit takes care of things like that. We don't have to do that.
There's a surprising amount of freedom in Christ's kingdom as He offers it to us, and it's something that I would rather be a part of a kingdom where abortion is legal, but no one's interested in it,
right,
as opposed to a land where abortion's illegal, but everyone's clamoring for it. I mean. Mm-hmm. You know, one's more a reflection of the heart of Christ.
Yeah.
A lot of it is, too, is knowing where the true authority is. Yes, I love America. I love everything we've got. And it's awesome that we're here. But the reality is that the true government, our true authority comes from God. And that starts with the body of believers. So if we start in our local churches and we actually pour into each other and pour into our communities, that's where real change actually begins in my heart. At least that's how I feel about it. And I believe that's where Scripture points us as well. Make disciples in our churches. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it multiplies naturally. And the laws don't even matter at that point because everyone knows what the moral code is.
But that's harder to do. Because then I have to actually go and surrender to God. The other one is I get to actually kind of lead the charge. And I'd rather lead the charge up Washington as long as I get to be in control. You know, surrendering to God, that's
yeah, tough. But I don't want to play by their rules. Yeah. I like my authority better of Christ.
Yeah. So about 20 years ago, my wife and I are in a hospital, and she's bleeding to death. And she's has a child. She's with child. And... the doctors are basically saying, you know, you're both not going to make this. And so we were having the conversation. Our conversation wasn't, well, what's the law of the land right now? You know, we had the conversation, mm-hmm. and Cheryl's like, I've had a good life. What would Jesus do here? Let's give this baby life, you know. And we basically said, take take the we're keeping the baby. And at that point, it was too late. So, you know, it's one of those, it happened. Obviously, Cheryl's still here. You guys all know her.
Yeah.
Except you. You know, it didn't matter what the law was. We had made a decision based on what we felt was what would Jesus do, I guess, the best way to say that. And because of our relationship with Christ, we were going with life. And even if it meant the sacrifice of another. Of our own, of herself. I mean, she volunteered,
right?
And that was, that's what it is. I don't care what the laws are,
right? This is what we do.
This is what we do.
It's funny. There's a large amount of messages that come out of the church today where they miss this completely, right? Like we spend a lot of our time teaching how to live a Christian life in the world that you live in, how to be in this world but not of it, right? And where we really miss the opportunity to say, you know, stop trying to participate in what the ruler of the world set up, right? Stop trying to participate in that wheel. That's not your wheelhouse, man. Like understand that the kingdom that Christ said that he's going to set up is done. He set it up. Live in it. Participate in it. Be there. Like do your work, do your job, do your loving, do your dying, do your fighting. Do it in that kingdom. And stop trying to act like you have allegiances in both places, because you know that the joy comes in the allegiance to this one. Right? And like we miss that. Like it's five steps to how to be a Christian at work. Just be a Christian all the time, right? Yeah. Like stop doing this to yourself. It's just like you were talking about, walking right on the edge, you know? You're like the proverbial carrot on a stick, man. That's you. Where you got Jesus in front of you and you're just walking around the whole time and never actually tasting the benefits and the joy of being in that kingdom. And like, and I think it kind of comes back to, they're just scared to go. You're scared to live there. You don't know how. You act like you don't know what's going to happen. You know the rules. You know what. You know who runs the place. Do you need to know anymore? Right? Like, hopefully my kids feel safe at my house because I am there. This, the part, no matter what happens, when the tornado shows up or when someone knocks at the door at night, they're cool because dad lives here, right? That should be enough for me.
Yeah.
I should be able to live in a kingdom that Christ set up because I know the guy that runs it, and that should be enough. And that scared stuff, which I buy into, really shouldn't be an issue.
Right.
And and frankly, that's the thing that kills me is, right, it doesn't make any logical sense to me. You know what I'm saying? If I know this to be true, and I know the guy that runs the kingdom that I live in, I have literally no reason to be afraid, yet I am. Yet I am. Because I don't know what you're going to do with my trust, God. I don't know what you're going to do with my trust. And that scares me. And so I'd rather have control of that trust and say, I love you. I appreciate what you do. I just don't trust you. You know what I'm saying? I flat out don't trust you.
And I suppose that's the truth in any relationship. I mean, you have marriages that are, you're missing out on this deep love for each other simply because I'm not sure what you're going to do with it. The more that I'm open to you, the more that I... the more trust that I give you, maybe I don't completely know what you're going to do with that trust, and so I don't take the risk. And you miss out on the connections that are there. Same thing with our relationship with God.
Yeah.
We're just not willing to do it. And, you know, I was thinking, I wonder if, kind of tie it back into to all what people's intentions are, is we've kind of bought into the Reaganomics approach, is that we're going to try to influence this thing from the top down and then watch it trickle, as opposed to doing the work from the bottom up. And I feel like the work of Christ is bottom-up work. Is that you interact with one guy, that guy interacts with two guys, and that's how things work. We don't Reaganomics discipleship, and I think the more effort we put into trying to influence government, I'm not saying not participate in it. You have freedom to do such a thing, and to the extent that you can positively influence, putting safety around people from harming themselves, I think you should do that. But the truth is that if your expectation is that your trickle-down Jesus approach is going to impact the masses, it just seems like that isn't how it works. That isn't. They send out two by two. They don't try to take over the emperor's position.
No.
Because we already have one. We have a king
already. He stopped to talk to the lepers. Do you know what I'm saying? The Reaganomics is you stop in the village and say, I'm going to teach you guys this. One of y'all needs to go talk to the lepers. That's not what happened, right? He's like, hey, boys, here's the deal.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, that was it. That was it. That was my reaction. It was weird.
I thought the conference was okay.
You did not even go to the conference.
That's why my opinion of it is pretty mediocre.
I wasn't a fan.
It's kind of right in the middle.
I just wanted to disagree with Mike.
It didn't burn me one way or the other.
There was kind of this weird moment. So one of the broadcasters was interviewing Bobby Jindal, and I was standing right next to his wife because I was helping with the production stuff. And like, at probably about 3 minutes, I was sitting there, should I say something to Bobby Jindal's wife? Like, she's like standing right here. And I spent 3 minutes trying to think of what I should say, and I thought, I can't think of anything good to say, and then I just backed away and sat down. Because I thought, what am I going to do? It was like, remember that time I said, hey, this is kind of a different kind of life you live here, Mrs. Jindal? I'm like, yeah, classic.
Yeah.
That's a way to make a difference in the world.
So thanks, radio man.
I sat down. I thought, no, there's no reason. Like, I don't even know what about me says you should say something. Why? What is my impulse to, like, hey, I need to interrupt her day while she's Facebooking to make sure that she heard me ask a dumb question? I thought, nah, I think we're just going to let that slide. All right. Anyway, you're listening to Life from the Path. Mike, we got time for a couple of your Life from the Path.
Yeah, we could rock it. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. No, that one's heavy. We're not going to dig on that one. Dear Life from the Path, at 24, I am fortunate to have loving, functional relationships with my mother, father, stepmother of 15 years, and stepsister. I attribute my healthy childhood to the fact that my mom and dad have always acted as best friends when we're together, despite having been separated almost my entire life. However, lately I've been finding my parents' relationship very inappropriate. They have been hanging out together often without me, and almost certainly without my stepmother's knowledge. I have stumbled upon suggestive texts that imply a flirty relationship, and probably more. I don't know whether there are recent developments or if I have just stopped being naive. I never want my stepsister to discover anything about my mom and dad the hard way. I especially don't want to see her hurt by becoming a child of divorce. Would I be overstepping my boundaries if I asked my mom and dad to spend less time together and restrict their relationship to being parents to me, and that's all? Hurt child / woman.
How old she again? 20-something?
24.
24.
24.
Wait, I'm confused by the question.
Yeah, oh, I think I'm hearing where her parents got a divorce, but now the divorced parents are flirting with each other again?
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's what I thought I heard.
After like 20 years, yeah.
Yeah.
So what was the question she asked at the end, excuse me?
Did she tell the parents that?
Would I be overstepping my boundaries if I asked my mom and dad to spend less time together and restrict their relationship to being parents to me, and that's all?
Do you think that they actually would, though?
Yeah. I can't say it's none of your business, I guess. It is your business, but...
Yeah, my instant reaction is yes, you are overstepping your bounds, but yeah. I think you're overstepping on what it is that you're asking. So, like, right now, all your information is kind of, you've gathered from, like, they didn't say, hey, we've become a little flirty with each other. You've been peeping, and you found out some stuff. So, like, yeah. I think it's, at that age, do I think it's okay for you to ask mom and dad? Yeah, I think so. I'd bring it up. I think it's a reasonable conversation. Yeah.
Dad, what's going on here,
Hey, what's up?
This looks funkified.
Yeah, but like, I mean, if you're going to charge in and say, hey, you guys are going to see less of each other, yeah, good friggin' luck with that.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, here's
the law.
Not working.
Here's the law with no change. Here's just the law. Obey it. Nah, yeah. You don't set the laws here.
Yeah, so I think you're overstepping to dictate what they do. Would I bring up that conversation? Yeah, I think so.
It's still okay to say you're uncomfortable with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just say, hey, this kind of creeps me out. But
this is a little weird. Yeah. What are you guys doing?
Or does it? It's weird. That's weird. I mean, it would creep me out, but.
Yeah, I would say the worst thing you can do, though, is to talk about it with everyone else.
Yes.
I mean, I know you said in the question, hopefully no one's listening, but that's something that you should address with them directly and just say, hey, this is something I'm noticing. Can I help? Mm-hmm. Rather than just addressing it and saying, you know, they creeps me out. You know, if there's something going on I can help out and you want to talk about it, great. But I definitely wouldn't discuss it with any other family members because that's gossip, that's poison, and it would make things a whole lot worse.
What if they said, yes, you can help? Can you tell the stepmom that we have a bowling league on Tuesday?
Yeah. Can you be part of my charade? Yeah.
Be alive for me?
Not as difficult as you make it sound. You
well,
say
first,
you
repeat
no.
the need. So you're saying you want me to come to bowling with you?
Yeah. Exactly.
The whole conversation is going to be awkward because, like, well, I was, reading your text messages I hacked your email.
That's true.
I'd still bring it up. Hey, here's the deal. You shouldn't have been doing that, but you're going to have to deal with your reality with your apology.
Yeah.
First, you need to repent.
Hey, Dad, I saw some text messages the other day. I hear what you're saying, but here's what they look like to me. Can you help me understand this? He'll say, can you ask your mother if she still finds me attractive? No, Dad. No, I cannot do that.
No, I cannot.
Get away from me.
No, that'd actually be an interesting approach, too. Say, hey, Mom, I need to apologize because I was going through your phone and your text, and I was kind of sneaking around, and I'm just sorry for doing that, and I'm going to make sure I don't do that anymore, and see what just comes of the conversation.
Yeah. By the way, Dad is flirty, isn't he?
Approach that. Approach it with humility and that you did something wrong and just let her come to whatever she wants to come to.
Yeah. Is there something you like to say?
Why we're apologizing for things?
In light that I've gone through all your text messages, care to talk about something?
Did you ask Dad about his BVDs?
Here's what Secular says. If you approach it the way you have written it to me, yes, I think you would offend both of your parents. If you are afraid of your stepsister maybe hurt if her parents separate, be there to comfort and support her, but do not insert yourself into what may or may not be an explosive minefield. This may be the way your mom and dad have always related to each other. Your stepmother may be aware of it, and you could come across as extremely presumptuous. Yeah, that's true. Here's the deal. Like, I don't know that my kids have any idea of the inner workings of how I speak to my wife on a general basis, right? They see us as a front, a team most of the time, that we've talked about things in secret, we've come to this agreement, and now we're presenting to you as a parental unit what the deal is, right? But, like, I don't have any way. They don't know how I speak to my wife or how I relate to any of my friends, right? And so, like, those insights to your relationship, your kids just aren't privy to most of the time. So she could be being very presumptuous.
We were just talking about that the other day, my wife and I. My daughters, you know, are both dating guys, and you can't help but kind of compare them to your dad type of thing. Girls do. And I mentioned, you know, they have no idea what I'm really like in a relationship,
right?
With my wife, they have a very glorified view. Like, no guy can measure up to me. I guess I've just always had a public, very perfect relationship.
That sounds like Cheryl's work there. I think she's been talking you up.
Well, no, I mean, what they have observed in me, I say things to her in private that I don't say to them, uh-huh, you know, in front of the girls. And
yeah, you're a fool behind closed doors, what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. and maybe a little more risque. You know, I mean, I just say things, you know. Yeah, so, right. But the girls would be like, ew! You know, I was like, hey, you know.
Hey.
They have no idea. I don't know where I'm going with this, but
I gotta go home.
Let's get a show, boys and girls.
I gotta text my wife.
Let me just say thanks to the constructs of marriage, God. I appreciate you giving me that.
My fool is coming out. I gotta go.
I'm just saying, she's the daughter. She doesn't know. I mean, maybe it's all that's just the way they talk. You know, and it's not, it doesn't really mean anything.
But
I
can see that, but that's still really weird for, like, her mom and dad who divorced 15 plus years ago, and there's a good chance that the new stepwife doesn't know about it. Or at least that's her statements. That may not be true, but that's what I'm going off of.
Well, what you're afraid of is stuff that we generally try to protect against,
right? I'm
not
afraid of anything.
Well, I would be afraid of something.
Fair enough.
What you're trying to protect against is, like, allowing an inappropriate relationship to cause problems in your current marriage. And so, like we generally in this room have a way that we regard talking to members of the opposite sex if you're married. Mm-hmm. You put in kind of safeguards. You guard that on purpose, because even the smallest possibility is not something that you want to invite. Yeah. And so, like, because we look at it that way, any type of flirty conversation between you and a woman you're not married to is grounds for, hey, what are you doing, right? Yeah. Like, that is not a generally accepted practice in the society we live in, nor the culture that we're talking about. And so, like, we're just coming at it from two different perspectives. So, I mean, you know, there's a thing to be seen there. Like, where we would grab on to say, No. Shut all of that down. It's going to cause you trouble in the long run. And we're right in that on most regards, right? It doesn't mean that that's necessarily the way that it's taken,
right,
the way that they're talking about it.
All right.
Okay.
So anyway, you got time for one more?
Yeah, one more.
Dear Life from the Path, my boyfriend, Aiden, and I have been dating for 3 months. That's an eon of time to be dating this man. I want to tell my parents, but I don't know how. They say I'm too young and immature to date. I'll be 16 in 5 months.
in about in half a year, I'll be 1 year older.
When you still mark time by months, you are an immature person.
Yeah. I'm 15 and a half right now.
Don't say that to moms that say their children are 19 months old.
Yeah, they're getting sucked back in. Yeah. That's what's happening. So they say Aiden is obsessed with me, and they don't want me staying in an unhealthy relationship. My parents think that I'm not talking to Aiden, but I really am. I want to show them I'm mature enough for a relationship. All they keep saying is I need to be realistic and respectful. I'm more respectful than half the people I know. I don't want to keep this from my parents anymore. What should I do? Holy cats.
All right.
Hey, your daddy got us some work cut out for him.
If you're respectful, shut up. It's your parents' wishes. You are not dating Aiden. Second off, you are sneaking behind their back on this relationship that they say he is obsessive in, and you want to come at this from a mature perspective. Well, maybe you need to immediately make it come to light and no longer keep it in. That's your first step. But no, your first step is breakup. You don't need to be together. Your parents are telling you you need to do something, and you're openly not doing it. You are being disrespectful to them and not honoring their wishes.
She's reached the high bar of being more respectful than half the people she knows.
Yeah.
I don't know who she knows.
All the other daters.
I'm kinder,
Aiden, I guess.
I'm kinder than 75% of a prison population, I'm 100% certain of, but that does not make me the most kind person in the room. Like, that's just, that's not how it is.
This is a disaster. You know she didn't mention his age for a reason.
Yeah. He's 18.
Yeah. He, yeah.
He's 18. Here's his name's Aiden.
Here's the problem. There's literally no advice that you're going to offer this gal.
No, you need to be
that she's going to receive, right? On the other hand, the parents have caused themselves a lot of problems here. And like we've talked about this, and it is hard to swallow, especially at that age. But you have to figure out a way to allow her some freedoms, and
to make
still
mistakes.
And to make mistakes and still be there to love her. And like, so I don't know that I can carte blanche say yes, you can date Aiden. I would love it. I would say if you want to see Dayton, I would more or Aiden, I would be more than happy to have him over here for dinner. We'd love to get to know him, and you guys can hang out here all you want. And I think I can be cool with that. Right, like you got to give them some freedom with some fences somewhere. But like, if you don't, this is what you will end up with. You will end up a girl struggling for freedom beyond all logical reason. She's taken your counsel and thrown it out the window and says, "You don't listen to me. You don't love me. You don't care about me. You just want to make me do this." And right, granted, all her reactions are outrageous, and the parents are probably right. You just have to be able to offer her something in the form of freedom and let Aiden work himself out. He will leave on his own.
What if Aiden's 22 with a beard?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of illegal.
It happens.
Kind of illegal.
I'd invite him over anyway, just so you can size him up.
Yeah, here's the deal. It takes a pretty bold 22-year-old to walk into the parents' house of a 15-and-a-half-year-old.
Hey, sweetheart, how was sophomore year? Let's go meet your parents.
Yeah, either he really loves your daughter or he's an idiot. Either way, he's going to get a foot. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't really matter.
Or he's going to open with, how much for the little girl?
Yeah. Jeez.
It's super creepy.
Wow. That's...
I agree, he's creepy.
I don't know if I go as far as foreign accent, how much for the little girl.
It's from the Blues Brothers. Don't you recognize it?
Oh, yes. Thank you. I did not see
that
it.
That does make it less creepy, but
yeah,
still
it makes it a little bit creepy.
Still on the
but
scale.
22-year-old bearded Aiden is still really weird walking up doing that.
Unfortunately, like I said, there's really no advice to offer her. She's not open to hearing it, right? Nope. Unless you say anything, but I completely agree with you. Your parents are modern-day Stalins.
You're your own woman.
Yeah, then she ain't going to hear what you're saying anyway.
You're your own woman. You can make decisions. That's no problem. You're obviously making great ones so far.
I'm more mature than half the people I know. I hang out with the foot. That's who I know. Okay, here we go.
What?
I know three T-shirts. That's
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, the Ninja Clan,
like the Clan, the Foot Clan.
So we have a random Blues Brothers reference on this one, and then we have a reference to the Foot Ninjas.
Have you nowhere to go to, Danny? No, it's with me. Here we go. Seculars.
I got you, brother.
I'm so glad this is on the podcast.
That's the best movie ever. Secular says when parents say a teen is too young to date, they aren't talking about the number of candles on her birthday cake. Zinga. If your parents are worried that Aiden is obsessed, they must have a reason. Sneaking around isn't a way to gain anyone's confidence. True. Teens show they are mature and responsible enough to handle the privilege of dating by being open, honest, communicating their feelings, listening respectfully to the opinions of others, and shouldering responsibility. If you start now, you may be able to convince your parents that you're ready. Dating teens. Here's Dan Hudson nailed it. You just tell your girls that they're not going to be dating until they're like 17. Just get it on the table now. Say it's not going to happen. And then they don't have to worry about it.
Actually, I got a different approach.
You can start dating when you're 6.
Actually, my daughter can date whenever she likes. But it has to be within a certain context. As they've been growing up, all of my kids, even my boys, I tell them, listen, you can date whenever you'd like when you're ready to start looking for a husband or wife. Anytime you want, absolutely. And ask him that question when you're about to date him. Hey, I'm looking for a husband. Are you looking for a wife? And it's actually kind of cool. My daughter is like on board. And we'll see what happens when she turns 16. But right. As of right now, that's the context of where we're going with is you can date whenever you'd like when you're ready to get married. And that's what you want to do because that's what dating is all about is you're courting for an ultimate end goal. So if there's no end goal, what is dating then? It's ownership. And we're not – do you want to be owned?
Ooh.
It's like, oh, no, I don't want to
like
that.
I like that. Do you want to be owned?
No.
Hey, man, that's where ownership comes in bad, not like in Perception Matters where ownership is good.
I like your approach. I've changed my ways. Do you like to be owned? You don't like that, do you? No, I don't want to be owned.
You like that, Mr. Potter?
Yeah. Look at that guy. He's got a Buick. You want to be owned by a man who owns a late model Buick?
Yeah. That guy lives in his parents' basement.
I think
he's driving a Monte Carlo.
Let me tell you something about Buicks. They don't make them anymore. You know why? Stupid.
Hey, no, rediscover the Buick. I saw a commercial the other day. Buick's coming back out.
This is the future. It's like 10 years from now, Bill.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. The Buick will be canceled.
Okay, I'm with you.
Yeah. I think one of the things I like about that is that the relationship starts with a conversation about where it's headed. It's not just two people getting together to just hang out and kill time together. It's, hey, here's my goal with this relationship. And the other person, they either have a similar goal or else go find someone else. I mean, if they're just looking for a good time, go find someone else. If you're looking for a serious relationship, then all right, we can talk.
It's hey, like, man, in the wrong crowds, you'll get kicked out of a Denny's for saying that, though. Like, if you walk up to a lady that's a waitress and just be like, hey, man, you looking for a husband? You normally get asked to leave.
Were you trying to date her legitimately?
Yeah.
And she asked you to leave?
The manager did.
Well, then she's not looking for a husband.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you what.
It didn't actually happen.
It works.
I'm just saying.
I'll tell you, I've not been the strongest believer my whole life, and trust me, I do not deserve my wife by any means. I married up, like, way up. But on the second date, I told her, hey, listen, divorce isn't an option, and I'm actually dating for marriage. This is when I finally decided not to do the things that sailors do all the time.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, okay, this isn't working. And it's like, hey, date two. I'm not getting a divorce. It's not happening, and I'm looking to get married. That's the end game. And we've been married 15 years, and it's been awesome.
Heck cool. Yeah.
All right, fine. Hey, I guess that I am coming at this at the most, like, inexperienced person in this room. Every one of you dudes are married, and I'm just like, hey man, I'm the single 23-year-old guy. Here's how you should date.
You're going to Denny's times. To pick
I
up
tell
a
you
wife.
How.
You find the cute waitress at Denny's and go, hey, you want to get married? Yeah. Eventually?
And you tell your manager that's not cool. Yeah.
I will have to say the only reason we've probably been married that long is because my wife is extremely forgiving.
I see that quite a bit actually in this room. Very forgiving and understanding.
No, that's right. Yeah. That's, you know, you found the right lady. All right, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us on the Live from the Path podcast. Hey, here's the deal. I had a couple stories. Here's the stuff we're gonna have to get to. Oh, shoot, what am I supposed to do next week? Maybe next week.
What's going on? Do we have any guests next week?
No. I think we're open. So we
next week.
10 toxic Christians in the church today. We're gonna try to get to that. Thanks, Kevin Lindgren. Five stupid.
Hold on, did you say 10 toxic?
Toxic Christians. It's got a guy with a gas mask on the front.
10 people you need to kick out of the church.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Good. Are we doing name specific or the types of people?
I think it's
name's Gerald Thompson.
There's a list.
Yeah. It's generic.
Probably.
Because Bob Rollins really makes me angry.
Number four, Frank Carmichael.
Here's the deal. Frank is a jerk. No other explanation needed.
Let's see.
I mean, come on. Have you seen him?
We're going to get to five stupid things the church needs to stop doing to make progress. We're going to talk about that. Also, I can't believe I didn't get to this tonight. But the adultery site Ashley Madison was hacked, and the user data was stolen, meaning all those people out there, and let's be honest, all the dudes that have signed up for this site
right.
to try to find a hookup to cheat on their wife, now their names are exposed to a nefarious group of internet trolls who have nothing better to do but shame you and possibly extort you for money. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to say you had it coming, but I think there's a lesson in there somewhere. We'll talk about that next week. That's what's going on. And let's see. Hey, before I forget, always a big thanks to Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower team. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com.
Hey, you know what? I will contact Bob. We'll see if Bob come in next week.
Okay, yeah, we'll see if he'll come in next week.
Okay.
Yeah, and we got to set up that buffet. Dang, we got to get on that stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, here's a little. I'll post that on the Twitter once we get a date set on the Life from the Path buffet. And you guys come out. It's completely you're buying for yourself.
It's Dutch treat, man.
Yeah, we don't do that kind of stuff.
Ain't no Presbyterians here.
Yeah, yeah. You don't. You buy for your own Baptist.
Baptist style.
I always here's the deal. Is like we went to a Baptist church and they always used to say that Dutch treat, and I thought, man, the Dutch are harsh. Seriously, I mean, somebody could help me out here. Anyway, that's what we got going on potentially next week on Live from the Path. Now that we've tanked the show, we're gonna have Dominic rescue the thing from Driven 11. Here's the deal: before we're gonna turn over to him to close the show out with the song of his choice. But don't forget the book releases in early August. Was it August?
August 8th.
August 8th. You can look for that wherever fine literature is sold, to places like Amazon and Street Corners. And that's Perception Matters by Dominic Cox. You can pick that up. Also, you can pick up his EP, Light of the Future. Go to Driven11.com. And also, again, wherever fine wares are sold. Again, fine wares anywhere. Dominic is probably producing a product which could be sold there. I picked up a vase from the Pier 1 Imports that he had made.
No doubt.
Yeah, yeah. He does that type of thing. The only thing he can't do is origami, and it's a thorn in his side. The Lord, he does what he wants.
Ben, I feel like just a strange need to question your integrity after some of these comments.
I run an internet radio program that you have to have a little bit of a screw loose to think this is going to be successful.
Fair enough.
all right, so let's close the night. Dominic, song of your choice, and go ahead.
All right, it's going to be Glory to His Name. Our present sufferings could not compare to the glory waiting to be revealed in us, 'cause we are made in His image, so let's back to the finish, bringing glory to His name, glory to His name. He's our God, we're His people, lifting up His banner, singing glory to His name, glory to His name. And He has overcome. All of creation waits in eager expectations for His glorious return, when His children will be redeemed. And oh, and be redeemed, 'cause we are made in His image, so let's back to the finish, bringing glory to His name, glory to His name. He's our God, we're His people, lifting up His banner, singing glory to His name, glory to His name. And He has overcome. And He has overcome. Oh, where are they?
Oh, 'cause we are made in His image, so let's fight to the finish, bringing glory to His name, glory to His name. He's our God, we're His people, lifting up His banner, singing glory to His name, glory to His name. And He has overcome. And our God has overcome. He has overcome. Our God has overcome. And our God has overcome.
That was Dominic Cox with Driven 11. Hey, be faithful in the means and let God take care of the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.